Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here. Hey, Lisa.
Hey, Julie.
How's it going?
It is going. Summer is flying by. I can't believe we are halfway through July already.
I love summer so much.
I do too.
I feel like, why is it that summer flies by, yet February and March feel like an entire year? Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's just, I think we do a lot more in the summer. And I don't know. I was just thinking this morning as I was out running this morning and it was hot and humid, but I was like, I love this. Like, I was like, I'm dreading going back to like the freezing cold. So, but it's going by very fast.
Yeah, for sure. I think also because we're both doing a lot outside of running and coaching. I mean, we both have like a lot of fun travels going on and things like that. It's flying by, and we're also working very hard in between to keep up with everything. So I just feel like the days are flying by as well. So
they are, but yeah, so it's going by, and I feel like, you know, a lot of our runners are doing well despite the challenges that summer weather presents to them. And we thought we would talk today about, some training tips, some summer training tips, and sort of our theme is, adjusting and trusting the process at this point, because I think it can be hard for some people, especially who are in marathon training cycles. This is a hard time. The heat and humidity can really mask progress, I think. And so I think it's hard for people to see their progress. So we thought we'd talk today about just adjustments that runners can make to make sure that they stay on track and come out on the other end of this fitter and mentally prepared for whatever they have in the fall.
Yeah. So when we came up with this coaching episode, we were just talking with each other and thinking about what do people need to hear right now in the thick of summer heat as they're reaching for these goals. And we realized that so much of training, so many things that are key to training are small things. So today we're going to talk about 5 small training changes that lead to big performance gains. And what we mean by this is that they're not big things that you need to implement. You don't need to change your schedule, change your life to fit them in. We're not asking everyone to create a whole new strength training routine. We have plenty of episodes on that, but this is more about if you are in the thick of your training and you are looking around saying, okay, what more can I do? Or this sucks because it's so hot. I'm not seeing the fruits of my labor. And in fact, I feel like I'm getting worse. Then this is the episode for you, because we're here to tell you you're not. And there are still some things you can do to prepare yourself for fall races, no matter how soon your race is coming up. We know we've got a few runners out there where their quote unquote fall races are actually in August. And we also know there are plenty of runners out there doing very early fall races in an effort to qualify for Boston, where the window is open for a double qualifier the weekend of September 7th. Just a little tangent on that. If you run a marathon the weekend of September 7th, if you qualify for Boston, you are qualifying for the Boston Marathon for 2024 and 2025 based on the dates.
Yeah, it's actually September 9th and 10th. That's the weekend, because that's, and actually I think you could also do it the second, because the qualifying period for 2025 is starts September 1st. So the 2nd and 3rd is a weekend, and the 9th and 10th is a weekend. And then registration, yes, I believe, starts on the 11th. So there are a couple weekends, the first couple weeks in September, if you do that before registration opens, that qualifying time will qualify you for 2024 as well as 2025, which is really nice.
Right. Sorry, I got my days confused, because September 7th is a Friday. Yes. So if there are Friday marathons out there, of course. So there are plenty of marathons that are actually over those two weekends. A lot of race directors are familiar with this little loophole and they take advantage of them. We know one of the races that is over those weekends is the Erie Marathon. and also the Last Chance to BQ Marathon, which I've run a few times. That too is over the weekend of September 9th and 10th. And yeah, so
Big Cottonwood's the other one that's on the 9th. That's a big downhill, you know, one of the Revel races. So that's also a popular, a lot of races that are PR friendly tend to put their races that weekend so that people can, you know, knowing that people are looking for a Boston qualifier before that registration opens and closes. So yeah, so we do have a lot of runners who are targeting, you know, who are kind of at the height of their training right now, because we're entering the height of their training, because their marathons are, like you said, late August, early September. So that's coming up really fast. We're like, not even 2 months from that. We're like, gosh, we're really close to that. We're like 6 weeks away from that. So yeah. So a lot of people are at the height of their training. So let's talk about these small training changes, or kind of, I think of them too as mental shifts for a lot of people, and kind of shifting expectations in the summer that runners can implement now to see those gains once the weather, hopefully by September the weather is going to cool down. But so let's go through some of those. The first one is one that we harp on a lot, but it's so important, and it's tried and true. We've been coaching for 14 years. We've been running for many more than that. And it's tried and true, is that you really have no choice in, especially if you're somewhere anywhere, that is hot and humid, you've got to slow your pace. And slowing your pace does not mean that you're working any less hard. You're working at the same effort. It's just going to be a slower pace. Your body cannot optimally perform in the heat and humidity. And really, the heat is anything over about 55 degrees. Once it starts going over 55 degrees, there are going to be adjustments that you have to make. So you really cannot, well, we say you cannot run too slowly, with the caveat that if you are changing your gait and you're shuffling, or you are slowing your cadence down significantly, that could certainly be too slow. But you really can't go too slowly. You want to be working in your aerobic zone, and your aerobic zone in the summer is going to be different pace than where it is in the fall and winter and the spring. So how do you run slower? We always talk about, you know, some of the factors that go into your speed, are your endurance, your cadence, your efficiency, your cadence, and your power. I think where you want to adjust in the summer or in hotter weather, or just when you're not feeling it, is your power and your strength, how much power you're putting, how much strength you're putting into your running. You want to keep your cadence up. So you want to stay efficient when you're running. So I think of it as, like, I ride a cyclist. I think of it as shifting into an easier gear and spinning at a higher cadence. So you're keeping your cadence up, but your power that you're putting out is staying low, and your heart rate is not spiking. So if you shift into a big gear and you try to pedal as fast, then you will go faster, but you're also putting out a lot of power and you're spiking your heart rate. So I think of it as kind of taking down the power, shifting down a gear, and going, maintaining your efficiency. So maintaining that turnover, but going slower. And we see it with our runners are certainly able to do that. I'm often commenting on runs saying, nice job slowing down, but your cadence stayed up. Your cadence is still high, but your pace came down. Your heart rate looks good. You know, it sounds like you felt good through the entire run. So that's how I think of slowing down.
I also think of slowing down as, it's okay to take brief walk breaks. There's nothing wrong, especially in the heat of summer, when you're running as slow as you can, but yet you feel like you're exerting a lot more energy than you normally would on a run using the same effort. That's likely your body's reaction to the heat and humidity. There is absolutely nothing wrong with taking a walk break. That's not a sign that you're losing fitness, and it's not going to cause you to lose fitness. Actually, what it's going to cause you to do is to finish your run not feeling completely depleted, and being able to recover from that run so that you can roll into your next workout without carrying that recovery that you weren't able to do because you ran too hard and too fast. And I will say one of our runners recently asked, and I think this is a great question. She asked, well, how do I run slower? I'm really struggling with that. And I think the key, Lisa, as you mentioned, of course, is not using as much power, but the other key is cadence. And we've talked a lot about cadence on this podcast, and it's worth repeating. You can change your cadence overnight. Some folks naturally have a very high cadence, and an ideal cadence in a perfect world, they say, is around 180 footfalls per minute. But if your cadence is close to that, that's fine. If your cadence is low, like in the 150s and 160s, you want to try and increase that cadence. And how do you do that? We highly recommend that you download a metronome app. The one we like is Run Tempo, and just start every 30 seconds in an easy run. Turn up that tempo a little bit higher than what your cadence is now and incrementally increase it and run to the beat. And just start,
but not for your entire run, just for 30 seconds at a time, like a couple times a run. Just like you said, cannot change your cadence overnight. So we don't want people going out and say, okay, from now on, I'm going to run at 180 footfalls per minute when you're currently at 162. We don't want to do that. You will probably get injured. It will feel really hard because it's not natural.
Yeah. Just 30 seconds at a time. And during these easy runs, it's an easy thing to practice because, to be honest, easy runs can be boring. So why not have an activity in your easy run where you're working on your efficiency and increasing your cadence? And then the other suggestion I had to this runner was find a partner who you don't usually get to run with, because maybe that person runs a bit slower than you do. And maybe this can be a run for them that's closer to their tempo and it's your easy run. And let them know what pace you're trying to run. They can let you know what pace they're trying to run. And if those paces match, then maybe that's an opportunity to run with someone that you don't ordinarily get to run with. But of course, you don't want to run too fast and carry them. So make sure you're running their pace, not them running your pace. And lastly, in terms of how to run slower, check your ego. I think a lot of this, unfortunately, has to do with ego and looking at that watch and wanting your pace to reflect something. Whatever your watch reflects doesn't matter. We promise. Your body knows. Your body runs by time. Your body doesn't know, oh, I ran 5 miles in 55 minutes or I ran 5 miles in 50 minutes. Your body knows that you ran by minutes. So if you run a little bit less mileage that day because you ran slower, that's great, because you're actually getting more training gains because you are able to recover from that easy run much faster. And then you're able to absorb the training gains from that easy run. And then take those gains and apply it to your speed work or to your long run where you're really trying to develop your fitness overall.
Yep. Great point. I was going to bring up one other kind of runner question that we had this week was a runner who asked, is it okay to take breaks to get water instead of carrying water? I don't want to carry water, but that means I'm going to have to stop frequently. There are water fountains I can loop by, but like if I take those breaks, is that going to affect my training? And I will say, if you take long breaks, if you're somebody who goes out, you know, sometimes this happens. We'll see somebody had a run and their moving time is an hour and their elapsed time is an hour and 45 minutes. And we're like, what are you doing those other 45 minutes? Well, I stopped, I went inside, I got, you know, I would say, and I don't know what you think about this, I think those stops are too long. Your body does need to stay in a steady aerobic zone for a certain amount of time for it to get the gains. If you're going out, if you're like stopping and you're getting out of your aerobic zone. Now, certainly there are certain times where you can't get in a whole run at once and you split it up and that's fine on occasion. But as a practice, it's good to try to go continuously, but a short break to grab water, to go to the bathroom, to take your nutrition is not going to affect your run other than allow you, like you said, to be able to continue going, especially stopping to get water. So if you're somebody who does not like to carry water and you have a way to stop regularly on your run to grab from a water fountain or wherever it is, if those can be quick stops, that's totally fine.
Yeah, it's kind of common sense. It's just a happy medium. Absolutely take walk breaks when you need to. Absolutely stop and get your water and take a moment to really get your nutrition in. But don't make it like, you know, a 15-minute break where you're chatting with everyone and just hanging out, because that's going to kind of counter all the effects that you're trying to gain from that run.
Right. And that's a good segue into fueling and you know, adjusting fueling in the summer. And I think it's especially hard in the summer. I know I've heard from a lot of our runners, they're like, I cannot eat when I'm finished. I feel so like gross from, you know, so hot, and, you know, I'll drink some cold water when I'm done, but I'm just not hungry after I'm done. But You know, obviously we'll talk about hydration and electrolytes and fueling during the run, but it's equally important outside, before and after your runs as well.
Yeah. So if you're someone that really struggles with fueling, we've talked about this before, consider a liquid diet in terms of post-run and pre-run fuel. So we've mentioned this before, a smoothie goes a long way. Make sure there's some protein in there along with the carbs from the fruit in the smoothie, and boom, you've got a great post-run recovery snack slash meal. Have it prepared so that when you finish your run, it's right there. Because I don't know about you, the last thing I want to do after a run is make a smoothie in the blender. I want it to be ready for me because I'm thirsty and I want something quick and cold. So make it in advance. And there are sometimes people who really truly have logistical issues with respect to eating before a run. And this is something we see a lot and we understand completely. Let's say you're someone who needs to take medicine in the morning, first thing in the morning on an empty stomach, and you're not supposed to eat within an hour. There are plenty of people who take medication. For example, thyroid medication. A lot of folks are instructed to take their thyroid medication first thing in the morning and not to eat for an hour. So unrealistic to ask someone to wake up an hour early just to take their thyroid medication and then run. So there's a couple of options with this. One is you can take your thyroid medication at night as long as the doctor says that's fine. Taking it on an empty stomach if you haven't eaten in a few hours. So that would absolutely alleviate that issue. But if that's not a possibility, one suggestion is to take your medication, start your run, have just, you know, a quick drink, have your hydration ready, and in your hydration have calories such as scratch or something like that. And then bring with you some nutrition on your run, even if it's a shorter run, because you didn't eat before your run. And then once you've hit sort of close to that hour mark, take your nutrition. So we're not saying it's great to run on an empty stomach, but if it's a shorter run and you've got some fuel with you, if you want to take that fuel a little bit into your run, if you're not able to take nutrition with your medication, which you need to take first thing in the morning, then that is an option that we've thought of for our runners that run into that issue. That's certainly not everyone, but it is a lot more people than I think, a lot more people than we realize.
Well, and a similar issue, which I've actually answered this question a couple of times this week also, is people who, you know, if they're trying to eat something before they run, they're having bathroom timing issues. And they've said, like, I'm eating, you know, this before, you know, trying to eat an hour before I run or half hour before I run, but then I have to stop. Like, you know, once I'm into my run, I don't know what to do. And what I recommended was try having something like applesauce or a fruit juice or something in the morning. If you feel like eating something solid is then working its way through your system and hampering your run, experiment with something that's easier to digest. So it's a very similar, you know, we just have people who they wake up and they're headed out and they don't want to wake up early to eat. But they feel like they need fuel on the run or they're going out for a long run. So, fruit juices or, you know, you were talking about smoothies before for after, but something that's easy to digest before. And, that may help with the bathroom breaks as well along the way.
Yeah. And this is something we've said before, and we will reiterate it. We know there are plenty of folks out there that run on an empty stomach, and maybe you've always run on an empty stomach. And your answer is, well, I've always run on an empty stomach and it's always worked for me. And our answer to that is maybe you'll actually be even better. Maybe you'll recover even faster if you try eating something before your run. Maybe that will be that small change that we're talking about today that can lead to some more gains. Not only will it fuel your run, but eating around your runs also helps with recovery. And recovery is so key because lack of recovery and building on these runs without recovering from the previous run, that leads to injury and overtraining. And nutrition has so much to do with preventing injury and preventing overtraining. So give it a try and see if that small change makes a difference for you. We have a feeling that for many who haven't tried it before, it will.
Yeah. And not only that, but you may not feel like you need a fuel. You could feel like may feel like you can go out and run on an empty stomach, even for maybe a long run or whatever you're doing and say, I haven't eaten before, but come race day, you're going to want to fuel before your race. And if you don't know what works and what doesn't work, like we're talking about this trial and error of like, what's going to make you have to go to the bathroom? What's going to upset your stomach? then your body's not going to know what to do on race day. So, and you're not going to know what, you know, what's going to work for you on race day. So it's a good opportunity to practice. And it's just, you know, this is something that's important year round. But in the summer, I think it just gets a little trickier because people, I think, tend not to eat as much because they're just not as hungry because of the heat. Sometimes we forget about salt and the importance of salt. Now I know some people have, blood pressure issues and may have concerns that they want to talk to their doctor about in terms of salt, but it's an important, not just sodium, all the electrolytes, potassium, magnesium, calcium, those are really, critical to feeling good throughout a run. If you are somebody who feels lightheaded during a run, who feels like they're just like kind of crashing halfway through a run, especially the lightheaded and dizzy is kind of the key to us. When we hear that, when a runner says to us, like, yeah, I felt lightheaded through that run, or I have a headache at the end of my run, or I've had a headache all day after my run, our first thought is electrolyte. So adding salt to your food is certainly an easy way to do that. I really like salt stick fast chews. They're a very concentrated, quick way to get electrolytes. I know people like Noon, or they put it, or Liquid IV is a popular one. You've got to drink that whole thing to get that whole serving, to get those into you. So I personally like salt stick, and I think it makes a really big difference. I've been taking two of them before I go out for almost any run now in the summer. And I really, really think it helps. So making sure that that's specific to summer is incorporating that into your fueling.
I like salt stick too. I tend to go with the caplets instead of the chews. That's just me. I like only having to take one thing versus a couple. But
four, actually. So this is another thing that came up recently. One of my runners was like, yeah, I took salt stick before I went, and I took one per hour when I was out. And I said, did you take the capsule or take the chew? They said the chew. And I went and I actually showed him with the nutrition information on them. It is four chews equals one capsule. So if you're somebody who normally takes one cap and you go to the chews, make sure you're not just taking one chew. That will be like barely a four. Four chews is almost the same as one capsule. So just as a little side note, because that was another question that came up this week too.
Yeah. So that's exactly why I won't remember. So I just take the one and be done. And right. but that is, to your point, I had a runner this week who wrote me and said that he just wasn't feeling well all week. And I asked him, it was extremely hot this week. I said, have you been taking in salt and your electrolytes around your runs? Are you thinking about that? Because a lot of people think they're drinking plenty and eating plenty, but if you're not paying attention to your electrolytes, which is separate from just drinking, that can lead, as you just mentioned, to headaches. And sure enough, he's like, you know what? I haven't been paying attention this week. And as a result, he didn't feel well. So that's a really easy, small change, is being mindful of your salt intake as part of your nutrition plan. And boom, you are feeling better around your runs. You're running better during your runs, and you're recovering better. And I will just say this. You mentioned just a moment ago, Lisa, that people tend to eat less in the summer. I do think that there's such a correlation between fueling and stress fractures and injuries. And I just really believe that while we can't always control how our body responds to training, training is always an experiment of one, especially as we get older and things change, we can control our food intake. And we know that the calories we eat, the fuel we put in our body, the quality fuel, is going to help our bodies recover and will help prevent injury. So why not make that small change and really pay attention to what we're putting in our bodies and how much we're eating? Because it's not just about quality, it's also about quantity. And we've said this also, running a marathon or training for a marathon is not a weight loss journey. So if you're someone that wants to lose weight, table that until after your training, and instead really think about your food as fuel to not only fuel your runs and your activity, but also to fuel your recovery to prevent injury.
Yeah, that's really important. And that kind of segues into our next tip, is listening to your body and adjusting the schedule or the trajectory. I think a lot of people have in their minds a set, I should be here, I should be at this mileage, I should be doing this. I have runners, I just had a discussion with a runner this week who said, should I defer my fall marathon, which is actually a later fall marathon, because I feel like I'm behind, I'm not on track. And I said, first of all, we have a ton of time. Second of all, you have been consistent. Now, maybe you haven't gotten in the distance long runs that you would have, in a previous cycle. But I think people are quick to start to panic at this point in time. I think a lot of things get in the way, work, vacations, weather. You know, I've had runners who said, like, I just could not run any more miles. Like, I was done. I was hot. I came home. I cut that run short. That's okay. But I think, you know, it's just taking a look at where you are, and not only where you are, but where you're coming from. That is, I think, really important. We have a lot of runners who came from maybe some time off, an injury, whatever that is. So if that's where you're coming from, you can't expect to be where you see the person on Instagram that's training for the same marathon for you, and that they just did an 18 mile run and your run was 13 miles this week. And wait, why am I not at 18 miles? I'm only at 13 miles. Well, you can't, you know, look where you're coming from and look where you're heading to and take a step back. I think it's so important to take a step back and look at the bigger picture. Like, this runner I was talking to this week was worried that she hadn't gotten in certain long runs. And I said, but take a step back and look, let's look at the last several weeks. Like, you've been consistent. Like, maybe you haven't gotten in the long run mileage, but you've been consistent, and maybe we've had to shift runs around, but you've got consistent mileage. And so I think, you know, taking a step back and not just focusing on one particular run or where you should be at one particular time, but where, you know, where am I coming from? Where am I going? Is it realistic to get there between here and there? Like, you know, if things have changed and it's not realistic anymore, then maybe you adjust goals. But I think that especially at this time as we're ramping up and we are getting into the higher mileage for most of the fall marathons right now, I think it's really easy for people to start to panic if they feel like they're not where they should be.
Yeah, for sure. And mileage isn't something where we can just kind of order it. Like, I'd like to order an 18 miler this weekend because that's what I've done in the past. No, that's how you get injured. And you don't want to put yourself in a deficit where maybe you're able to run 18 miles because you have that cumulative endurance in you because you've run a lot of marathons in your life. But that doesn't mean it's a great idea, because maybe you're someone who's returning from injury and the longest run you've done so far is 12. Sure, you could probably eke out an 18 miler because you've done it before, but what does that mean for the rest of your training? It means that you're spending a lot of time recovering from that 18 miler because you just shocked your body by making a leap from 12 or 13 to 18, just to quote unquote catch up. But really, it's you're setting yourself back because you didn't build up to that organically. So the question is, do you want to meet yourself where you are right now and gradually build, and maybe not have as many 20 milers or 18 milers going into your marathon? Or do you want to jump ahead and then get to the start with being able to say, well, I did 3 or 4 20 milers. And yeah, I jumped from really fast and I was able to squeeze it all in. I'm going to tell you that, especially if you're an experienced marathoner, you're better off having lower mileage long runs and several of those if you are someone that's a seasoned marathoner, if you're coming from a place of low mileage, than to try to force higher mileage just to be able to check those long runs and those particular distance off because you've done that in the past. What that's going to do is it's going to cause you to get to the start line not fresh, not recovered, and potentially compromised once you get to miles, you know, 20 in the marathon, when you really need to push because your legs are going to be tired and not as recovered.
Yeah, that sort of reminds me too of a couple runners in the last week or two that I've had who said to me on a particular day, like, I was just tired today. I slept in, I skipped this run. And I will tell you, the next run they did the next day or the next workout they had, I'm thinking of two in particular just this week who said, wow, I felt so good on that run. I'm so glad I took that day off. I have never heard somebody say, I don't know if you've ever heard anyone come to you say, I'm so sorry I took that day off. I shouldn't have taken that day off. More likely, and I think I complimented both of these runners of, like, good job listening to your body and not feeling like because you didn't get that run in that was scheduled that you, like, you know, that you're falling behind or you failed that day. That's actually a win for you to recognize that. And again, both of them came back the next day, nailed their next workouts, and both said, I needed that day off. I'm so glad I did that. So one day is not going to derail your training, and it's actually going to be more productive to recognize, like, I'm tired. You know what? I feel like this summer, you know, people are out later. They're out, you know, where you're doing a lot more stuff. Just being out in the sun all day makes it, you know, can really fatigue you, can really take it out of you. So if you need that day, take it. No, like I said, I haven't had anyone come to me yet in my recent memory that said, I'm mad at myself for taking that day off. That was stupid.
I really like that. So we're kind of talking about two separate things. So the first small change is think about adjusting your expectations, because not everything has to be in a certain formula where you've got, you know, I do 4 long runs of this amount before I get to a start line of any marathon, and this has always worked for me and this will work for me now. It's more about adjusting your expectations and meeting yourself where you are right now. And then what you're talking about, Lisa, specifically, I really like is adjusting your expectations and your being flexible within your training schedule. So what that means is thinking about day to day, okay, I know my schedule says this, and I know my coach wrote this out for me, but I'm not feeling like this is the right workout for me today, because what my coach doesn't know is last night I wasn't able to sleep. I was up half the night with my child, or I'm worried about something at work and my brain is not allowing me to really focus on my running this week. And I don't think I can do this speed workout this week because I'm just not feeling it. And I think it's better for me to run easy this week and do the same mileage. That is a very intuitive. And we as coaches want our runners to be intuitive. The last thing we want is for our runners to look at their schedule and say, you know what? The last thing I want to do is do this workout because I am exhausted from my 2-day travel and I've been sitting in a car for 2 days and my legs are really stiff, but my coach has this workout on my calendar and this is the workout I'm going to do. No, we want to hear from our runners, and we're sure there are plenty of coaches out there that feel the same. And if they don't find a new coach, we want our runners to tell us if they're not feeling right, because we want to adjust their schedules to ensure that they're doing the workout on the day that works for them, but also that they're not doing a workout that's going to work against them. So what are we saying here? We're saying be kind to yourself, be flexible, look at what you need that day, follow the schedule as a guideline, but if it's Tuesday track, and you just feel like your body's really depleted, it is okay to just run the mileage at Tuesday track and not run speed that day, and maybe shift your speed day to another day or skip it that week. Or, you know, we can put it into your long run for that week. But going against the flow of what your body needs can be counterproductive. Conversely, sometimes it's good to push ourselves. Sometimes there are those workouts when you wake up in the morning and you say, I do not feel like doing this workout. I don't think I can do it. And then all of a sudden you get there, you get to the track, you start moving, and it ends up being a great workout. Those are the best days when your expectations are low and then you end up having a great day. So it's very nuanced, but what we're trying to say here is that if you're in tune to your body, trust your gut, and know that you know your body best. And if there are certain days where the schedule isn't working for you, then speak up, make a change for that day, be flexible, and know that you can work around that. And by being flexible and listening to your body, you will get that much more success out of your training, which will allow you to recover. You see a pattern here, and which will allow you to absorb the gains from your training and get to that start line even healthier.
Very well said. So let's close it out with our last tip, but I feel like it comes back full circle to where I started by saying that I love running in the summer. Embrace it. Like, first of all, we're going to be complaining as soon as we get, you know, the first snowy day. We're going to be wishing that we had a nice, nice, warm, sunny day to be running, or at least I will. I can speak for myself. But really, and trusting, and we can say this from, you know, all of our experience, it will bring gains as soon as that. And we even saw it a little bit, I think it was maybe last week. There was one day that was like a little cooler and drier. And most of my runners were like, I felt so good today. This is great. I'm like, this is a little window into what the heat and humidity typically masks. And, you know, we say it and it's hard to believe it because we feel like we're dragging and it's so hard, but embrace it. The training in the heat leads to big gains. We don't often see it until the weather cools off, which is can be difficult, but you know, if you follow everything that we've been talking about and stay patient, adjust your expectations, slow your runs, you know, everything that we've talked about today, you will come out on the other side and it will, you will have made great gains. And so embrace it. Like, I love the feeling of getting back from a run and being all sweaty and like, I don't know. I love it. I love to go, like, I haven't done it yet this summer, but like go jump in a pool after, or go, you know, we have runners who go jump in a lake after their, you know, their hot summer run. Like that's fun. That's great. So embrace it. And the one exception we would say, and we've had, this is the first year we really had to talk about this locally on the East Coast, but air quality. And we've had that a few times this summer. The air quality, if the air quality is poor, don't embrace outs running outside, go on your treadmill or put it off, take a rest day, change your schedule around, put it off until the air quality gets better. That we don't want people running in poor air quality. But also, you know, and related, you know, talking about running on the treadmill instead, which is certainly fine on days that are super hot or the air quality is bad. But don't use it as a crutch. Don't use it as a, you know, as a, okay, it's summer, I'm just going to get on the treadmill, it's easier. Running outside will lead to gains. Just the running outside, first of all, you're really having to work to propel yourself off the ground. You don't have a moving belt to keep you moving, to assist you. So just that, but running in the heat safely and smart, like we've been talking about today, does lead to gains. So don't hide from it, embrace it, enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah. If you really have a hard time with the heat and you have a treadmill, divide it in half, do part of your run on the treadmill, part of your run outside. That's totally fine. Maybe you're right. Still going to get gains from that. And your comment, Lisa, reminded me of a quick story. One of the runners we coach is a pilot, and the other, he lives in Florida. So a lot of his runs are in the hot Florida sun and heat. And the other day he ended up in the San Francisco area, and all of a sudden he was flying literally and figuratively. Yeah. And certainly he was able to see a little window into his training gains just by going to a different part of the country for a day and then coming back to Florida. So I thought that was pretty cool to see that on his final surge on his data, how much faster he looked going to a different part of the country.
Yeah. So we've had some runners who've been able to travel to cooler places and they're like, wow, this feels so good. And so it's just, it is, it's hard to believe it when you're going through it, but it really, there's, if you're getting in the work and you're being consistent, and you're being smart about it with everything we talked about, that means slowing it down. That means good fueling, good nutrition, good hydration, good electrolytes. It means being smart about your training in the heat. You will see those gains.
Absolutely. So with that, we're going to close out our coaching episode today with the small changes that we can all make to make it big gains in the fall. And just a heads up, we're going to be taking the next few weeks off from podcasting, because we're both going to be running around ourselves, and we look forward to reconvening in August. But in the meantime, if anyone has any questions, we certainly welcome them. We love the opportunity to engage with our listeners. Speaking of which, there is still time to leave a review. If you leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts, and we so appreciate all the reviews that have been left so far, leave us a 5-star review. Just shoot us an email, julieandlisa@runfartherandfaster.com. Let us know you left a review and you will be entered to win a pair of Good Earth sunglasses. And we will announce that winner in our next episode in August. You have until July 31st to enter. And lastly, thank you to Lagoon Pillows, which continues to be a sponsor of our podcast. We have a link in our show notes. Use that and use the code RFF to get 15% off on first purchase of your Lagoon Pillow.
And I will just add too, if anybody's thinking about training for, you know, winter to spring races, we are talking to runners who are going to start training with us in October. So if anybody is out there and thinking about wanting to work with us, please reach out now so we can start a conversation now and kind of get you on our list. Because we are actually have scheduled people out to October now for starting with us. So reach out to us. We love chatting with people now because we can kind of get a sense of and give some guidance on what they can do between now and getting formally started to make sure they kind of get started on the right foot.
Absolutely. So Lisa, I hope you have a good few weeks. Thank you to everyone for listening, and we look forward to reconvening in August.
Bye, Julie.
Bye, Lisa. Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryan. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others. And please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening and have a great week.